Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Heart-Centered Loving. As always, I'm your host, Jim Brown. And again, as always, I want you to know that you're safe and that no harm will come to you in this space. My goal is always to bring more love, happiness, joy, compassion, peace, and abundance into your life. Listen to the show with the goal of taking one thing out of it and implementing it into your daily life. And now, you know, today we're going to have Terry Cole Whitaker, so she's going to have a ton of stuff. And I'll start with a real quick opening quote from her, and that is, God didn't make junk. And the opening story. This new store that sells new husbands has opened in Toronto, where a woman can go and choose a husband. Among the instructions at the entrance is a description of how the store operates. You may visit this store only once. There are 6 floors, and the value of the products increases as the shopper ascends the flights. The shopper may choose any item from a particular floor or may choose to go up to the next floor. However, you cannot go back down except to exit the building. So, a woman goes into the husband store to find a husband. On the first floor, the sign on the door reads, "These men have jobs." She's intrigued, but continues to the second floor where the sign reads, "These men have jobs and like children." That's nice, she thinks. But I want more. So she continues upward. The third floor sign reads, "These men have good jobs, love children, and are extremely good looking." Wow, she thinks, but feels compelled to keep going. She goes to the fourth floor and the sign reads, "These men have very good jobs, love children, are extremely good looking, and help with most housework." Oh, mercy me, she exclaims, "I can hardly stand it." Still, she goes to the fifth floor, and the sign there reads, "These men have exceptional jobs that pay them very well. They love children. They are drop-dead gorgeous. They help with all the housework and have a strong romantic streak, and they're 100% faithful." She's tempted to stay, but she goes to the sixth floor where the sign reads, "You are visitor number 18,456,012 to this floor. There are no men on this floor. This floor exists solely as proof that women are impossible to please. Thank you for shopping at the husband store. Please exit to the right to make more room for unreasonable shoppers." Please note, to avoid gender bias charges, the store owner opened a new wives' store just across the street. Similar instructions are posted at the entrance of this store as well. The first floor has wives that love sex. The second floor has wives that love sex and have their own money and like beer. The third, fourth, fifth, and sixth floors have never been visited. Now, I don't know how many women are out there, and if you are, you might not like that one. Anyway, just to let you know, I'm going to be speaking on that 7-day Mexican Riviera cruise called Spirit of Love, and that's the 14th to the 21st of February, which is Valentine's Day, on the gorgeous new Crown Princess, and they're having a sale on right now. I don't know how long the sale is going to last. Pardon me. But if you go to lovecruise2015.com, you can scroll down, you'll see my picture, and you click on it to see the description of the programs that I'll be giving. But those programs are what love is and what love isn't, self-acceptance and self-love, and the power of forgiveness to heal. Each of my programs is 90 minutes long, they're interactive, and they're humorous. Gotta be humorous. And I love getting in front of an audience. Anyway, the cruise is a round trip from Los Angeles. It goes to Cabo San Lucas, Mazatlan, and to Puerto Vallarta. So now, let me introduce the Reverend Dr. Terry Cole Whitaker. She has been lauded as one of the most influential trailblazers of her time. She opened the spiritual and motivational gateway of opportunity for many of her students who are best-selling authors, spiritual leaders, entrepreneurs, educators, artists, and celebrities. She is called the Counselor to the Stars. Laurel King, in her best-selling book, 10 Women of Power, lists Dr. Terry as one of the 10 most inspiring and powerful women in the world. Dr. Terry Cole Whitaker has written 6 books. The one I talk about all the time, What You Think of Me Is None of My Business, a New York Times bestseller, number one bestseller, How to Have More in a Have Not World, The Inner Path. The next one is Love and Power in a World Without Limits, A Woman's Guide to the Goddess Within, and Dare to Be Great and Live Your Bliss. She's appeared on over 800 radio shows and television shows, including Oprah, Good Morning America, Regis, and Larry King, and featured in magazines and newspapers around the world, including Time, Newsweek, U.S., People, Family Circle, Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles, New York, and London Times. And after completing her ministerial training with the United Church of Religious Science in 1973, she set out on a mission to spread the teachings of love, prosperity, positivity, and happiness to the world. In 1977, she was called to the La Jolla, California Church of Religious Science, where under her leadership, the congregation grew from 25 to 5,000 on Easter Sundays in a few short years. As the executive director of this Emmy Award-winning weekly television program, With Love, she, along with those who supported the ministry, reached and uplifted millions of people with the message of love, prosperity, and successful living. She has been given 4 honorary doctorate degrees for her spiritual and humanitarian work, and as a sidelight, her daughter calls her Doctor, 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 Doctor. She teaches that anyone can have a blissful, prosperous, healthy, and love-filled life if they learn and apply the teachings of the wisdom of the ages. She lived in India for 4 years and has studied with mystic masters and Vedic teachers. Dr. Terry's home now is in Mount Shasta, where she conducts retreats. She personally counsels her grand master students and is working on a new book. And now we bring her in. I pressed the wrong button. Here she is. Ta-da!
Well,
welcome.
Are we on?
Thank you. We're on.
We're on.
We're
wow.
on, baby.
I'm with Jim. Jim Brown.
You
Wally.
Are. Well, it occurred to me when I put her on hold. She called in just like any one of you would call in. I put her on hold. I didn't know if you were listening, if you heard what was going on while we were waiting for you, while you were waiting for me.
Oh, are you talking to me? Well, I thought your joke was funny.
Oh, good. That's
so
more
I
than
know you can't hear everybody laughing, but I was laughing.
Yeah. And that's the
I
thing.
I laugh
we
at
were
my
talking
own
about
jokes
this.
Anywhere. Anyway.
Well, isn't that right?
Yeah, I got
my wife
laugh.
Go ahead.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
No, I said I laugh at my own jokes anyway, so I'm glad you were, because I thought it was really funny. Because probably
yeah, well,
true.
Well, it is. You know, there was an email I got that has a whole long list of things that a man has to do to please his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the bottom it says, and here's what a woman has to do to please her husband.
And you made up the joke?
Show up naked.
Oh.
And maybe bring a beer.
And bring a beer. Oh, my goodness.
What I wanted to say as we get started is that, you know, we were talking ahead of time, and what we're going to do, folks, is Terry and I are just going to talk to each other like we're on this show alone, and we'll
mm-hmm.
allow you to eavesdrop. If you want to call in, you know the number. It's 646-595-2831, or if you're in the chat room, there's one person in here, but you have to sign in as a person. Email us with that. But what I said every week, almost every week, Terry, is that Terry and I both belong to the National Speakers Association, but she got there sooner than I did. And when I first started speaking 25 years ago, my biggest fear was that somebody in the audience would ask me a question and I wouldn't know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ran across your book, What You Think of Me Is None of My Business. And
mm-hmm.
to me, what that said was, you're going to think whatever you're going to think of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gave me permission to be myself. And it gave, mm-hmm. in my mind, I gave the audience permission to like me or not like me.
Right.
Which is what they were going to do anyhow.
Anyway. Mm-hmm.
And it totally changed my whole approach. And now if I don't know the answer to something, I'll ask the audience. It didn't have to. But how did you come to write that book?
Well, I came to write the book because that's what I had found was my biggest problem, and really is the biggest problem of most people. They want to be liked. And that is it comes from a very deep thing of the fear of being rejected, abandoned, dying in the street, having nobody to help, no friend, whatever it may be. It's kind of a survival thing. And as I started looking how that had gotten me into trouble so much was giving my power away to other people, believing what they said, and being jerked around emotionally depending upon other people's thoughts and words and that sort of thing. And as I began to really get deep into that subject and to find out how that had influenced and affected me, and also as a counselor at the time, and which I still am, and teacher, everybody that I ever dealt with, they always had these feelings of unworthiness, not good enough, because somebody told them that they weren't, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, always being upset and afraid, and, you know, if they got rejected in a relationship or everything, they just thought, oh, I'm just terrible and awful, and they shut themselves down. And so how this knowledge freed me, and it takes time to work with it because you have to get down to the basic core of it, I knew that it would help other people. And that's kind of what I've done, is I don't make up stuff because I'm a seeker through, as you mentioned, the knowledge of the ages, the wisdom of the ages, which you can get like out of the Vedas and ancient technology on human development, which exists. And most metaphysical and that approach actually does come from that ancient teaching, and you could apply it. So as I applied things for myself and how that changed me and continues to work for me to be stronger in my relationship with my God and trusting myself and not trusting the mind, because the mind is the greatest terrorist weapon ever invented. And
mm-hmm.
being a public speaker, as you are, Jim, being out there, just like a lot of my students are celebrities and entertainers and artists and people, constantly being criticized and judged, and how do you deal with that? So that book so freed me and has helped so many people, and that's really what I do. I share what I have discovered, just like you do, Jim, and what works for me, and I offer it, whether people want it or not, is their choice. Yeah.
Well, and that's always it. And we'll talk in a little mm-hmm. bit about choice, and people don't realize mm-hmm. that's all they have is choice. Now, my spin on that whole thing is
mm-hmm.
that when we're born,
mm-hmm.
for many of us, that's as close to unconditional love as we'll ever experience. We can pee on mom and dad. We can poop on them. We can vomit on them. We can keep them up all night. And they love us unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
Then, unknown to them, they develop expectations of us. And to the extent that we fulfill the expectations, they shower us with love. When we don't, they withhold our love, which for
mm-hmm.
most of us sends us on a lifelong journey of what do I have to do to be lovable, to deserve
mm-hmm.
love.
Mm-hmm.
And then most moms and dads didn't know how to teach us how to love ourselves and separate behavior having consequences and I love you. You're going to have to
mm-hmm.
go to your room and I love you. And then what's another thing we're taught when we're little kids is you don't want to hurt other people's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So what do? You stuff your own feelings.
Mm-hmm.
which creates all these things you're talking about, this upsetness, this being afraid, you know, you shut down, you know, oh, my God, people aren't going to like me. And, you know, it's like most of us, or at least you and I get, that we're here to remember really who we are.
Oh, absolutely. That, you know, statements, people don't realize, because I think most parents try to do the right thing, but they were also influenced by their parents. And just like in the Vedas it says, and Veda means knowledge, so it's not a mystery, but it means knowledge of truth that works. And so when we're all trying, in a sense, to be good enough because we have been taught that we weren't good enough. Whether maybe they wanted a boy and you were a girl, or we wanted a girl and you had a boy body, or the parents were always competing with everybody else because we're taught in school to compete, and those who are good get a good grade because they can regurgitate basically a bunch of nonsense. And so we're always thinking we're not good enough, so when we're bad and we think we're bad, then we punish ourselves. Because God doesn't punish anybody, because that's not what it's about. But it's basically self-punishment. Yeah, self-punishment, because we're not good enough, and you have to get to the core of it. And if you're not good enough, then you never have enough time, enough love, enough money, enough opportunity, and all of this stemming from there's not enough loving or any of that, when we are love. So what it really means is people shut down, like you said, because of all of this. And the Vedas say there's no beginning to ignorance or suffering, but there is an end, and the end comes with knowledge of who we are. And when we do that, we start to apply it, we let go of hatred and resentment and grudges and beating ourselves up and sabotaging ourselves and shooting ourselves in the foot all the time, out of this stopping ourselves because we're so bad. And I remember something I used to do, Jim, is if I remember my mom, too, because she was kind of always upset about whatever, me or I don't know what it was. But anyway, I didn't get too involved in what my folks, their problems, or my family, because I was too busy being very active and doing my own thing most all the time. But you begin to realize that you get all of these messages. Like whenever I was out there doing things and successful at it, my mother would be upset. Whenever I was helpless and weak or sick, she'd be there to love me and comfort me, because that's what she got her strokes from, was I could help her. But other times I'm very self-motivated and self-actualized and all that, so she didn't know what to do, because then she would feel useless instead of acknowledging herself that she had a self-determined child.
Well, and
so
and
we
now
have those patterns. We set up those patterns.
Where does it work? Like, my wife, Rosemarie, has been a hospital pharmacist for 51 years. And when she was brought up, her mom and dad said, get a profession, get a profession, get a profession. We got married. We had a baby. They said, stay home and take care of the baby. And she's going, what? I mean, all my life you told me to get a profession. I have a profession. You know, and what we did is we were able to raise our children and both have our career, and maybe they were with a babysitter 2 hours a day. But women are taught. As a matter of fact, when she graduated in 1963, she wanted to go to veterinary school, and they wouldn't admit her because she was a woman.
And that hatred? It's basically a hatred of women, because it's the fear of women. There's an ancient story of how women in maybe millions of years ago, because we've been here longer than people say. That there was a certain kind of a woman that could just spit on you and you'd die. So men are a little scared.
I don't get it. I mean, it drives me nuts, because...
Well, they are, because it's fear. And what they don't realize is the fear, because they want to control. Whenever we want to control someone... And women are basically, because we're multitaskers, you know, it's almost called a home entertainment pleasure center. It could be a woman, because, you know, do all the things that women could do because we had to do it. It's the nature of a mother, is to take care of the family, the children, be in charge of spiritual things and all of that. So it's they had to basically, in a sense, put women down. And I was reading something recently, and it's all throughout all religions, is that the woman is inferior to the man. And what happens is, yes, physically most of the time, unless you're Serena Williams or something, she looks like the Hulk.
And, I wouldn't play tennis with her.
I wouldn't meet her in a dark alley either. But it's like, yeah, it. But most of us see, and then women, they would say they're less intelligent only because we're more in our heart and not as much in our mind because we're tuned into intuition and all these, which are quality. And we have to think that woman and man, we're not talking about that. Let's talk about male and female because those are different energies like plus and minus. And everywhere there's gender in everything, even in electrical appliances, the positive and the negative. And these two sides are two sides of a coin, but it's the same coin. So male and female are two aspects of our own being. But if we're shut down on either one of them, we're operating, instead of on 8 cylinders, we're operating on 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the 4.
And if I were to characterize the mm-hmm. problems of the world in one phrase, mm-hmm. it would be exactly that, lack of balance.
Lack of balance, that's it. Exactly.
And we have to do it
ourselves. Yes, we can't look to somebody, the government or the medical or the education, because they're not set up that way. We have to do our own research, just like you have and just like I have. And I always even study things that everybody tells you you can't and you shouldn't and you shouldn't look at. And I go, if I can't look at that, why? What are you hiding? And, you know, I can make my own decisions. And that's another thing.
That's right.
We're told by government or everybody else, we'll make your decisions for you. We'll tell you what you can read and what you can study in school. And then you have to write back and regurgitate what we've told you or else you flunk out and you'll never get a job. I mean, it's insidious.
I had written, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago mm-hmm. about fear and realized within minutes that the entire world is run by fear.
Yes.
And people they buy into that and they then become a victim. And we're going to talk about victim versus choices and about how we create a reality. And the example that comes to me is that when the non-guilty verdict came down in the O.J. Simpson murder
mm-hmm.
trial, they mm-hmm. interviewed her sister and said, "What do you see Nicole saying now?" And Terry, this was amazing. She said, "My sister said OJ is going to kill me and get away with it." And to me, what better example is there of the power we have than a woman saying how she was going to die and what was going to happen to the man
mm-hmm.
who ended her life?
Mm-hmm.
And yet people don't look at it as power, do they? They look at it as she was a victim.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, she was with somebody like that. That's what creates being a victim, because people lack discernment. They think they're going to change somebody, and they never really look to see, right, what that person really does. It's like this one book that I have that I call it Prospering Choices, and it's about discernment. I've self-published it. But it's for kind-hearted people like us, basically, who
mm-hmm.
always want to see the good in everybody but fail to have discernment, to be able to know what somebody's up to. Just because you see the God presence with them and you see who they really are, they may have no clue of who they are, but if you hook up with these people, your reality is going to shift to their reality very quickly. And then that's when we become victims, is when we lack real knowledge about human behavior and who we are. And I would bet you many times that woman, whatever her name was, her inner guidance told her to get away and never come back again. And the problem with a psychopath, when you hook up with a psychopath, they'll hunt you down. And so if there's any people, if you have anybody around you who's a psychopath at any time, that means they enjoy your suffering. They choose to dominate you, get you away from everybody you know and everything, and they enjoy your suffering and make you cry and feel bad. Get out of Dodge as fast as you can and don't
Absolutely.
Look back.
Because
it's never going to change.
And I think that goes back to, at least my point of view, is that before we come here, we write the script for our life and who's going to be mom and dad and who's going to be husband, wife, what color, what sex, and what we're going to have as our, you know, I want to learn this. You remember Sylvia Brown's
books? Well, that's what happens when you go to the light in the tunnel. You'll get trapped in the astral plane, and they have to have handlers to talk you in coming back into this realm. A lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah, right. With the near-death experiences?
Uh-huh. Those are all just astral plane. Nobody's going to the spiritual world because you wouldn't come back here.
Well, that every time I've read something about someone that has had a near-death experience, they don't want to go back. But they're told your work isn't finished.
Yeah, well, they're told that or whatever, but that's in the astral plane. But we have choice that people don't realize. We have free will. And that's why there's so much mind programming that goes on in the news, educate, everything, because we have to agree with it before it happens. And most people don't realize it, even like these terrible games that children are so involved in these electronics, that some of the children could even move into the animation and become part of the animation, which means they leave their body. I mean, it's nasty. But what happens is nobody's forcing them to, but the advertising and also being accepted with your peers and everything is so great because of that thing we started with in the program. People want to be liked. Teenagers want to be accepted. They don't want to be bullied, and they want to be part of the group because they're so terrified to be alone because they've never experienced the joy of self-realization of who they really are. So they get caught in the outer. And when they do that, they're the one buying these things, and they're the ones programming themselves by their own choices, and that's a misuse of their free will because they're causing themselves pain and suffering.
But I think that it starts with having an awareness.
Yes.
You first have to be aware that, first of all, there is no such thing as right or wrong. There just is.
Well,
and
it's not one level there is, my darling, because you have to get that there is evil, in a sense. And that means it depends on what, on the highest, highest level, which nobody hardly is there, at the highest level, we can perceive it all, and that we're all fine because we're eternal, and we are never born and we'll never die. But what happens is causing pain and suffering for oneself and others is not a good thing. And what it does is it stops people who are not aware and who do not know their spiritual advancement. And that's why, in a sense, the control structure has to tell people what they're going to do, and they have to get people to agree that they want that. And when people agree,
then they take it on.
Yes, exactly.
Going and bombing ISIS and whatever, you know.
Whoever they are, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. We have no idea what's going on because we're not there. We're right
here.
It was fascinating. And right where you are is fine.
Recently, I met a guy, and he said he had been in the Navy. And I said, were you in the Navy with John Kennedy? And he said, no, I served in the Korean conflict. He says, but I knew guys who were in the Navy in World War II. And this is something I had never heard before. He said that the United States removed all the carriers from Pearl Harbor on December 6th.
Except the old junk boats. The ones they were going to trash anyway. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. They knew what to
do. So you had to sacrifice somebody because Churchill had said to Roosevelt, you got to get in the war. And Roosevelt's response is, I got to get the people mad enough.
Exactly. And that's what they're doing now.
Right.
That's what they've done.
And it's all out of fear that these people, you know, I read where it said that an American is 8 times more likely to be killed by a policeman than by a terrorist. So they get people to believe, oh, my God, this is a threat to us. We're defending democracy. Defending democracy in Iraq, in Syria?
That's not our business.
That's right.
But we need to take care of our own, and that's the problem. That's in all of us, you know. It's very easy for us to focus on everybody and everything else other than taking care of our own business, in a sense.
Well, and that's where
whether
we can...
Whether taking
we can...
care of the health of your own body, because we can look at other people and always decide what they need and they should have and what they want. But what about you and your relationship? Like, you teach love, Jim, and that means communication, and that means within communion, which means in union, but also as
right.
individuals, and how you and love is a verb. It's an action. It's not like some parents say, oh, I love my kids, but they're not really there for them, and they're not encouraging them, and they're not taking care of them, but it's just idle words. A lot of people say, hey, love you, baby. I love you, baby.
Yeah, love you, bye.
About you. Huh?
That drives me nuts. Love
yeah.
you, bye.
Love you, bye. They don't care about you. And anyway, so love is really an action verb of taking care of. Like, you know, I love my kitty cat, but I take care of her. You know, I love my daughter.
Now, let me ask
granddaughter.
You a question. You're talking about how you were brought up,
mm-hmm.
and you're talking about being a mom,
mm-hmm.
and my observation is that girls are socialized to become a wife, and they take care of their husband, they take care of their children, and then
mm-hmm.
whatever is left is for them. How did you get from that to the place where you saw and knew that you had to take care of yourself as number one?
Well, I don't consider myself as number one in a sense. I think my God is or my source, but I don't think they're exclusive. I know what you mean, because yes, I have to take care of Terry over here. I have to do what I have to work on myself, basically. Not to evolve. I believe we're all evolved already, but we're just some in different levels of ignorance that we can peel off like we peel off the layers of an onion, right? Or I actually like it more unfolding like a rose or a beautiful gardenia that you just keep
mm-hmm.
unfolding, but you never close back up again. And what I realized is when I got to the top of my ministry, where I had international television ministry in 450 markets all over the world, nothing internet at that time, no cable, it was all broadcast quality, you know, and I was on all the covers of the magazines and the news and had attained everything I wanted that I was told would bring you happiness. And I'm going, wait a minute, something's wrong with this. I'm still miserable. time. And I thought, what's wrong? And then I started to look at where his mom, and even at that point, my children had, they were grown, but they had to have appointments to even see me. I was so
right.
into that world. And I had to look at, wait a minute, let me reevaluate. When was I really happy and peaceful and blissful? Well, with my babies, with my children, taking care of my house, I love that. Being in nature, just like I go barefooted a lot, and barefooted
mm-hmm.
is a really important thing, and I live here at Shasta, so I walk the mountain barefooted, and it's
mm-hmm.
such a powerful thing. And what I realized is when I started looking at where does my bliss come from, and a lot was nature. And as a kid, walking barefooted on a country road with the dust coming up between my toes, and just yesterday, Sunday, I was walking the mountain with my friend, and we were up at the top by a little stream, and it's just beautiful. And there I was
yeah.
barefooted, and the dust was coming up between my toes, and I went, this is heaven to me. This when
there you
I'm
go.
In with my babies, my children and my grandchildren, and my one daughter passed away 2 years ago, and
oh.
I have her cat, so the cat's my granddaughter, and I take care
uh-huh.
of her. She's my granddaughter. What am I going to do? Because that's what my daughter had. She didn't have children. And love is so beautiful because the heart sometimes expands so much you can't even take anymore. It's so, so beautiful. And I'm happy of everything I ever did, but I was not balanced. I was going for the world game that said, oh,
uh-huh,
you'll be really happy when you're really rich and everybody loves you and you're famous and you have beautiful clothes and you go, well, yeah. You get there and you realize, well, hey, that's just stuff. Where
that's
am
right.
I? Where am
and
I?
The way I look at it is when there's going to be a lot of people when they die are going to be bitterly
mm-hmm.
disappointed to find out they didn't come here to play Monopoly.
No. It's not about their stuff. And, you know, a lot of people, they work to have not lose their stuff. I think there's a thing in China where those koi fish, you know, the big gold, like,
yeah.
big gold
yeah.
fish, they live like 300 years. And they're very prized in that some of the people that have these fish, they leave them to the family member that they sense is going to have a child, that they'll pick up that body and be that child so they can have all of their money back and their fish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it might work sometimes. Sometimes you might miss it, but that's what they're taking. They want to take
now
it.
Now, we have what, another 4 or 5 hours?
This is fun, Jim. Well, what is it really, when we want to get down to it, that whole thing of fear is a mind virus. And fear is not natural to the human being. Neither is envy and anger. And if you have fear, envy or anger, then that's a symptom that you have been slimed, that you have been infected with the mind virus and the implant of the reptilian brain. Because they are not. Human bodies don't evolve like that. And humans are not mammals or animals. We are human, and it's a different species altogether. And that means that, yes, we eat, sleep, mate, and defend like every other insect or animal, but we can contemplate God and who we are and actually own and be who we are and then become self-determined. And when we become self-determined, we live in a whole different reality.
What do you mean when you say self-determined?
The self, I call myself, myself and yourself, I sense, are the same because that's God. But you and I are particles of that. So we're, in a sense, miniature gods. We're not the
right.
big deal God. So that means we have all these divine qualities. So by being self-determined is I allow my God self, my goddess self, whatever it may be, God goddess self, to direct my life.
So from within, your higher self,
yes,
your
yes,
okay, your
yes.
soul, your spirit. And
yes,
that's the thing
yes, yes.
That creates so much problem is
mm-hmm.
the words that we use to describe
yeah.
something.
Absolutely, Jim.
And it's like, you know, some people call you doctor, some people call you reverend, some people call you mom, some people call you doctor, 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 somebody calls you Terry. You're the same person.
Yeah, but
here we are in 2014 where
yep.
We're still killing each other because you don't belong to my religion.
We were taught that. And that's the problem of this sort, the manufactured religions is for the purpose of destroying humanity. Because you can see things out there are not happening by accident. They're very well planned. And when we understand that and we see how thorough the programming is and the indoctrination and even the taboos that you can't find out about this, you can't look at it, you can't ask questions about it, you can't do that, is because it's all mind control. And when someone's
mm-hmm.
mind is controlled, then and the people know what our weaknesses are. Most people have no idea of their strengths or their weaknesses or who they are because they don't take the time to do the research and the investigation. And now people are so busy trying to just put food on the table and handle all the stress that's everywhere, it's like fewer and fewer people more and more people are just sitting in front of the TV watching the ball game and eating junk food.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that they basically have lost, and they're moving down levels instead of moving up into the highest of self-realization and self-actualization. And it takes a lot of courage to be who you are because sometimes you're alone and other people don't agree with you and they'll laugh at you and they'll ridicule you and they'll put you down. We police each other and police ourselves through rejection and ridicule and condemnation and criticism. And that's why it's so important. If people can get copies of what you think of me is none of my business. And it's a little paperback. It's only like
yep.
$7
yep.
or something, or
yep.
You know. And if you really get that, you begin to untangle this web of confusion that is depowering to everybody, and you could start owning and empowering yourself.
Yep. Didn't Sammy Davis Jr. sing the song, I Gotta Be Me?
Somebody, I like that. We used to sing it in our church. Yeah.
But isn't that what we're saying? I gotta
be me. but people don't know who me is. They think they're their false ego. They think, well, who I am is I'm 6 feet tall, I'm green, I've got blue eyes, I have this car, I got this house, I got this degree. That's who I am. That's not who you are. That's
They're saying what they do or what they have is who they are.
Yeah.
And
they
that
don't
becomes
know, or,
their identity.
Or their accomplishments or what they have. And what we have to look at is the number one problem everybody has is they falsely identify themselves as a physical body. When you do that, you're afraid of death. And and that then people are controlled by that fear of pain and death and loss. And and so that's how people are jerked around. And that's how people, well, we don't want the terrorists to come get us over here. Well, they may be the terrorists who are telling us that. Because what they're not giving, because real solutions give us the power of how to empower ourselves.
Well,
so all
and
of
that's where
depowering and fear-ridden, What Jimmy?
And to me, if if I look at it, we've talked and I've been to over 100 countries. And the way I look at it, we're all the same. We all we all want to feel safe and secure. We all want good health. We want to be happy. We want to be able to share the times that are important to us with the people we love. Now, the
that's
way
real
we
people.
May
that's
differ,
real human being, Jim. That's what real human beings want.
And that, and that's all of us. That's all 7 billion of us. Now, how we
Well, those who are real humans want, well, there are, there's a lot of artificial intelligence out there, and it's almost like there's some artificial intelligence run amok that has a program of devastation that's running on it.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe some ancient civilization or something created artificial intelligence that's still operating, and people don't know that.
Well, and
infiltrating
people's
minds.
Which brings me to the, a question of, we visited the Pantheon in Rome, and there it was run by the priestesses. And I don't know what happened, where we went from the place of having high priestesses to women being subservient.
Well, probably what my research says, it happened about 500,000 years ago when the only way to take over humanity was to destroy the female because the female is connected to her intuition. And they could, too, if they actualized the ancient Egyptians before Akhenaten, who brought the ridiculous religion of one male phallic god, solar religion. And he was kicked out of he was kicked out of Egypt, and he was Moses. And so what happened was before that, everybody was balanced, male and female, and they honored the feminine. And actually, all human beings are first conceived female, and that's the X chromosome. And then at some point, those who are going to be male, one of the legs of the X shrivels up and becomes almost invisible, and that's a male body. But we're basically female, which means not woman, but female means that we are the lovers of God. And the Vedas teach us there's only one male, and that's God. And all living entities are the lovers of God. It's a mood. It's a mood.
So as we stand here today, how do we, or what can you give as far as counsel to the people who are listening? How do we get back to this place of love and respect of a male and female and a partnership where, hey, Terry, tell me how you do this or that. I can't multitask. I really can't. I can walk and chew gum at the same time.
You're supposed
But I can walk and chew gum at the same time.
I know you
can, but
you're supposed to focus on the objective, the goal, because if a, say if a female doesn't have her male connected, she's all over the place but can never focus. So she becomes like bouncing off the walls because she could have all these thoughts, but she can't do anything. If you get a male that's just single focus, like a single blade knife that doesn't open up to their feminine nature, they have no extrasensory perception, they have no intuition, but they have it. But they deny it, and they're afraid to have it because they were ridiculed in the past about
little
they were being a woman.
Little boys don't cry.
Oh, yeah, don't cry. Don't feel.
Little boys don't cry.
No, and then they ridiculed intuition and psychic abilities and healing abilities, and our entire body, besides just having these five physical senses, those senses, each one of them has a number of extrasensory perception and supernatural abilities that makes this body is amazing gift that we're able to perceive. We're time travelers, we're interdimensional, we're remote viewers, we're healers, we're psychics, we're artists, we're geniuses on every way.
You're covering about 5 years worth of stuff in 45 minutes. This is like you're my horse. I'm saying, whoa, girl, slow down.
I know. I have to be careful because I know. But you know what it really is, Jim? It says nobody needs to believe anything I'm saying. They should do their own research. And people, that's
right.
Nonsense. Well, that's your programming that tells you it's not possible. And all is possible, and all is possible to every single person listening. And if you don't claim your power, somebody else is controlling your mind and your life.
Right. Well, but that's what people do. They give their power away.
Yep.
Because we are not taught that power is a good thing. You can look at presidents of the United States,
mm-hmm.
heads of religions,
mm-hmm.
Wall Street,
mm-hmm.
big banks,
mm-hmm.
and you see where power is abused. So people don't think, well, power is something I want to aspire to until
mm-hmm.
you see how sacred it is.
Yes, it's
and
divine.
And that you
power.
And I know that we've mm-hmm. been given gifts, and both
yes.
of us can get in front of an audience.
Yes.
And we can get to the audience, but because we have that gift that does never, ever give us the right to impose our agenda on them.
Not at all. We can offer what we have, but we'd never want to interfere and dominate or control somebody else.
But the whole thing is
yes.
to empower them.
Exactly.
Not for
exactly.
me to be the focal point, but for me to give my... You know, hey, you take your power back and
right.
you be who you came here to be. You
absolutely.
Express your divinity through this vessel that you call a body.
Exactly. Beautiful. And that's what people say. See, we can trust our inner guidance, and we don't live in the head. And what happens is this is according to the Vedas, we operate the body with God from the region of the heart. And we float on five kinds of air, so we never really touch the body because we're not from here. We're spiritual beings who have taken on this garb of materialism, and we can use it for our highest good. But a lot of people, because they don't know who they are or what it is, they're suffering all the time because they're afraid of death, disease, loss, rejection, ridicule, all this stuff. That they've given the power to other people to determine for them who they are, what they could do, what they can't do, and then to even look at it, it will change a whole dynamic of a family or anything else when a person becomes truly healthy in mind, in body, in emotions, and everything. But you have to be willing for that, because if you really become who you are, every one of us, and we are loving, kind, compassionate, generous, we have all of these capabilities, but the only way we can be controlled is to be taught that you're too stupid to run your own life and make your decisions, so then we'll do that for you. And women are this way and men are that way. And so what it is we have to give up, in a sense, all of that programming and start living from our heart, just like you teach, Jim. To trust
mm-hmm.
your inner guidance is never going to be wrong. But most people say, oh, well, what do I know? Well, you know, you can know everything you want to know, and there is no time. You are an eternal being, and you are
right.
eternity itself, and bliss is your nature. And that's my newest book is Live Your Bliss that's out there, and that comes after... Many books after What You Think of Me is None of My Business, but I read that recently to see if I need to do an update. Nope. What You Think of Me is None of My Business is a good one.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Where are we?
Where
I got
are
a bunch
we?
Of things I wanted to talk about, and I think
talk
we're on number two. tell me about this wisdom of the ages.
Yes, see, there's a lot of wisdom of the ages. Like even wives' tale. Somebody said, oh, that's an old wives' tale. You mean old wives weren't smart? They had to take care of the health of the family, right? Yes, they were brilliant. And then they belittled, oh, that's just an old wives' tale, like it's not as powerful as science or something else, you see. And science is basically a bunch of magicians with some explosives of some kind.
Well, yeah. Let's not go there.
Well, I'm not into that realm.
The scientific method. Well, you know, and then who funded the project?
Well, one of my dear friends is Cremo, Michael Cremo, and he wrote the book Forbidden Archaeology and the the hidden knowledge of the human race, because there's archaeological discoveries that show human beings have been here for millions of years, and we are not the most advanced civilization. In fact, we're very degraded, and they want people to think, oh, you're the highest we've ever been. No, and that's why the knowledge of these ancient civilizations is so blocked. And that when countries go in and invade people like Iraq, and they go right to the museums and steal all of the archaeological artifacts and such that gives ancient technology. And that ancient technology was amazing, just like the pyramids.
Are you familiar with The Ancient Secrets of the Flower of Life by Junbalo Melchizedek?
Yeah, well, I didn't follow him very much, but I know the Flower of Life because I studied sacred geometry.
Okay, but in there he talks about how all the pyramids of the world are geometrically connected, which makes you say, okay, somebody had to have the ability to be above them because the civilizations didn't know one from another.
No, they were all connected because they made all these, there's pyramids all over the planet, and they were all lined up exactly on the ley lines. And then there was a catastrophic event, like major, major earthquakes or the flood or whatever. It shifted everything just a couple of degrees, because before, the pyramids were used for their energy system of the entire planet. And in ancient times, it was the Vedic culture that was everywhere on the planet. And then after that, of course, you've got Atlantis, Lemuria, and, you've got all of these other ancient civilizations. And right even where I live here at Shasta, some say this is in the mountain is an ancient Lemurian site of where people went when Lemuria went. But there's also a big military complex, and there's tunnels that go to all of the different planets, and they've got underground tunnels to every place on the planet, say, for ancient technology. But yes, lots has happened, but we're right here, front row seat, for what's happening now, so everybody hold on, but keep yourself in the highest state of being all the time.
Mm-hmm. So let's slow this jet plane down. And for most of the people, when I speak, at the end of the program, I'll ask an audience, well, what was the most important thing you got out of this program?
Mm-hmm.
And it fascinates me how many times somebody says something, the most important thing they got out of the program, I didn't even say.
No, exactly, I know.
Which I figured out, okay, they processed it through their filters of their values, of their belief, of their life experiences, and gave it a certain meaning.
Yeah,
and we don't have to say it. All we have to do is to get them to identify it so that it solidifies. Because we're creatures of habit. And if you say, well, let's copy down the 28 things that Terry said today, they're not going to do anything with it.
No. But if you say, the one thing they could say is, if anything, Learn to trust yourself. Your intuition and your knowing is always accurate, but your mind you cannot trust, and you cannot trust your thoughts. And you need to understand how the mind operates to use it as a tool and to activate your subconscious, which is amazing, and will give you solutions and ideas and tune into your divine mind and go forth and be who, like you said, be who you are. And most people go, not who you think you are, not what you've been trained to believe, but know that you have a guidance system that is right with you that knows the truth about everything, and you feel it and you know it. Trust it.
Now, how do they tune in to their divine mind, or how do we tune into it?
Well, what you have to do is it's a test. When anything comes up, you have the test. Is this good for all living entities? And if it says no, it's a lie then. If it isn't good for all living entities, then it's a lie.
And how do you know when you ask that question?
Well, you would say, what are you doing that's good for all living entities? That means, how are you with people? What do you project? How do you act? What do you say? What do you do? And if you're coming from envy or jealousy, anger, cruelty, you see, and fear, you have been infected with a mind virus, and you need to clean that out of your mind by recognizing how that's been controlling you. And envy is a disease of humankind that resents the good of others and actually enjoys their pain and pleasure, their pain and suffering, and says, good, I'm glad that happened to them.
Well, I don't know how many people out here, you know, are basketball fans, but I live in Los Angeles, and Magic Johnson came out of Michigan State at age 19.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that made him so good is he made everybody he played with better.
Yeah.
And to me, we're all in this game.
Is everybody around you prospering? Yes. If people around you are happy and prospering, that's a wonderful thing. That's a comment on you.
Well, and that to me is the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing I've gotten out of speaking for the last 25 years
mm-hmm.
is that I can play with everybody everywhere in the world.
Yes.
And
people
we were on a cruise that I was
sweet. Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I there was a little 3-year-old boy on this cruise ship. We didn't speak a word to each other, but
mm-hmm.
we played with each other. I laid on the floor. We kicked our feet. He would come up to me, and he would slide with his Spider-Man shoe, and
aww.
I'd pretend to put my foot on top of it. We couldn't even talk to each other, but we had a great time
together. Played.
We played. And to me, the whole thing in my life is about you feeling better about yourself.
Yeah, people have to realize there's nothing wrong with them. That's all a big lie. Something can happen to your mind or your body, but nothing can ever happen to you. You are a spirit soul. You are made, as the Vedas say, Satchitananda, Vigraha. You're made of eternity, consciousness, and bliss. You are indestructible. You are eternity, existence itself. You animate dull matter. You are divine spiritual being.
Now, I'm going to ask a question, and that is that, I have 18 years of Catholic education, and until
mm-hmm.
I was 44, I believed that stuff hook, line, and sinker.
Mm-hmm.
And people, then I moved away from it, and people start saying, okay, you're the soul, you're not the body. And maybe a few years ago, I got
mm-hmm.
to the point where I thought, 51%, I bought into that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now at 99%+. How do people get, because everything in the world we live in talks
mm-hmm.
about the physical body and,
mm-hmm.
you know, being good
mm-hmm.
and the shape and eating
mm-hmm.
and free
mm-hmm.
from disease and this and that
mm-hmm.
and the other thing. How do people move, you
I'll
know, as a process? Go ahead.
I'll give you a first exercise. You have to know the distinction between matter and spirit. It's a distinction. What I'd like everybody to do is look around your house, go out in the yard, the street, wherever else. Look at, count how many ideas you can perceive. How many ideas do you see? Look in your house. Well, my refrigerator was first an idea. The basket I'm looking at was first. This phone was first an idea. My body was first an idea. See, the table, the trees, an idea in somebody's mind. Everything has a source. And when we get, we are cause, we are not effects. The body is an effect. And I like to have people say, I'm not a body, I have a body. I'm not a mind, I have a mind. Now, we also have divine mind, divine body, and divine intelligence. And that's what we have to start to activate. But we have to know the distinction between us and the material world. And that begins by beginning to notice the spirit, the ideas, the consciousness behind everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beginning step.
Okay.
Okay.
We are at the end of an hour.
We
have
fun, Jim. You're such a good
guy.
We
can keep going. Nobody has called. I don't know. Maybe it's just you and me, baby.
Well, a lot of people don't call because they like to listen. And it also, in a lot of stuff I say, maybe people go, well, that's far out. Well, that's far out from your reality, but it doesn't mean it's not true. And it doesn't mean it's not happening. And that's why I believe everything and nothing. Because I know all is possible. But I also use logic, divine logic. And this comes, people have to work at it. They read my books, you know, they attend what you're doing or study with me or whatever or whomever rings your chimes. But get seriously into that and you will find you become happier and happier because our nature is bliss and happiness. And everybody, I'm a pleasure seeker. And my pleasure seeking has led me to that God presence and to who I am because that's the greatest pleasure that exists. It's called love of self. And myself is God. I'm not God, but I have a love affair with God. God's my boyfriend, and he's really nice to me.
See, now, I like her as a mother.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yes.
I feel there's...
Yes.
I relate to the mother aspect of God
because
I love
it,
feel...
Too.
A nurturing there, and when
yes,
I think of
yes.
a mother, I think of a heavy grandmother who you can just nuzzle into her bosom, and you know that you're totally loved and you're totally safe.
That's why I'm a grandma, and I love being a grandma. And I have lots of people who I've adopted as my children and my grandchildren. And I consider all the children of the world my children. I consider all the animals and all this because the real purpose of a human being is to be there as a representative of God, Mother God. I serve the goddess, too. I love the Divine Mother. They're on my mother is on my altar.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then I wonder, like the first time my son, he thinks of God as energy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had this Catholic version of God. No, he's an old man with white hair and a long white beard, and you call him energy. And what I realize is it conflicted with my identity.
Mm-hmm.
My perception of who God is became my identity as a human being. And when he came along and he threatened that, I went, oh, my gosh. But it opened these huge doors to, okay, God
well, God's
is everything. God is
God. Yes.
Yeah.
God, everybody has a relationship with God. They, even an atheist, they're saying God doesn't exist. You can't say something that doesn't exist that does exist because by saying it doesn't exist, you validate that it does exist. That's just the way it works. And if you want to have a relationship with God as God doesn't exist, fine. But I'm a pleasure seeker, so I have the greatest joy and happiness by my God is a loving God and is a joyful, beautiful God and a goddess, and they love me and adore me, and they're wealthy, and I'm their only child, and they give me everything I desire and need. Because everybody is like the only child. They are loved that much. Mm-hmm.
The way I say it to people is that there is nobody that God has ever created that he, she loves more than they love you.
Exactly.
And there has never, ever been another human being that will ever be given the gifts that you have been given.
Mm-hmm.
Please share these gifts with us.
Oh. Well, you're going to have a wonderful boat cruise.
Oh, we will. The spirit
of love. People get to be with you then.
Isn't that great?
That's great. Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, it's just... Again, it's to empower people. because they got lost. It's the constantly they say, well, you did this. I didn't do anything. What happened is you were ready to hear what I have to say, and you're ready now to act upon it. You may have heard it 2, 3, 4, 100 times before, but you weren't ready yet.
Yes, right.
Now you're
well,
ready.
We weren't either. I look at different things that I'm learning now and realizing now and going, well, my people knew this hundreds of thousands of years ago because truth is eternal. It's not just something that appears and disappears. It can get covered, but the absolute truth of who we are has always existed. And I just happen to be open now to this where I wasn't open before, but I don't have to be mad at myself and beat myself up and feel bad that I didn't know it before because I wasn't ready before.
Exactly. You weren't ready. And all these things come in divine synchronicity.
Yeah, and they can ask. They don't realize you have a power that is with you, that is your source, that you can ask whatever you desire, and then the knowledge will be given to you. And then we have to use how are we going to use what we have, because we want to use it for good. That means as a benefit to all, because that's benefiting us as well.
I was talking to God one day, and what was going on, I just said to myself, you know, this is all my imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And the response I heard was, what better place to meet you?
Exactly, than your imagination. People invalidate because they say, no. You know what the mind is designed, according to the Vedas, is to reflect the spiritual world. But because people are so busy looking on the outside and all caught up in the glamour and the glitter and the stuff, they fail to take the time to be alone and to be with their inner guide. And when we do that, then we view the world from our true self, but we're always consistently with who we really are and with our source, with our God. It's a whole different world. All right, my darling?
Well, or it's that we look at it differently.
Yeah, it's perception. Absolutely. It's perception.
It's, you know, I mean, the way we see it, and when I go to a wedding, I say to the bride and groom, I said, I have an exercise that will guarantee your whole life will be a happy marriage. And that is, you say to each other every single day, what I love about you is. What
That's
that causes
so
you to do. The exercise will take 15 seconds a person. But it causes you to have to continue to wear, and I actually say to audiences, buy a pair of pink-colored sunglasses so you can see life through rose-colored glasses.
How about you and Rosemary doing? How about you and Rosemary doing a show together on Blog Talk? Do you ever do that?
No, she's home. I think she's taking a nap right now.
Yeah, well, I want to hear her input too.
Well, that would be fine, except that she doesn't see it the way I do. And if I were to say we don't see anything the same, she'd say, "No, no. In 1987, we saw this the same." But the point is that what we all we can find is what we focus on, what we look
exactly.
For.
Well, what we
and
yes,
everything
what
is
we
a perception.
Yes, yes, it's a perception, and it depends on where we're perceiving from. We're either allowing the outer world, which is an effect, to cause us to feel or to be, or we're coming from our true self as a cause and viewing the world as an effect.
And when we get out of balance, like, and I'm going to ask you to talk about this in a minute.
We have
an effect that's called sickness. And our society deals with the effect to make us unsick, but never looks at the causal relationship between the cause and the effect.
Because most stuff, I remember my body had a stroke back in 1986. I was trekking in the Himalayas and the long story, whatever. But anyway, when I looked at the cause of it, besides eating all the bad food that was, and Seth, I had guilt, I had fear, and that guilt and the fear made me then go for the so-called comfort food, stuffing the feelings and the emotions and all of that
mm-hmm.
stuff, which then all, but everything has first a mental cause that, and if people will look at, see, we're naturally healthy, but somewhere they got the idea they were sick. And then you have to look at when
Speak
did you
business.
Get that idea that you were sick. And you have to recall that day when you had the aberration in your mind and what you were using it for and what you were doing with it. And most people maybe do not want to look at that because they want to say, I had nothing to do with it, which is a lie. And lies persist.
Well,
when
that allows you to
truth,
be a victim.
The problem disappears.
But by saying, I had nothing to do with it, allows you to be the victim.
Exactly. So then you can't even get over it because...
And you don't have any power.
You don't have any power. That's right.
And I'll say to people, you look at your life and you say, it's a pile of manure, and I would never create that. I said, forget about that. You didn't know you could create.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know you can create. What do you want to create?
And nothing's wrong with manure. Cow manure is great. It grows vegetables.
But the point is to get them to believe and accept that they're creators or co-creators.
Well, the way you can do it, too, another people, they have to look at, when they go out and look at how many ideas, and then look at how many ideas around them, and they look at then, they begin to see how many ideas they conjure up in their own mind and how they become a reality around them because they first had the idea, the consideration of it. It's like to be well, you have to consider that you could be well. To be sick, you have to consider that you could be sick. So it's like
mm-hmm.
we are very powerful, but it's like that's why there's so much mind programming is to dumb us down to the point that we are victims and we are helpless and we're depending on everything else, a government, a certain religion, somebody else. And as when you depend on others instead of your God source, you're always going to be in fear.
And that we're never alone.
Never alone, no.
And no. One of the prayers I love is footprints.
Oh,
and I'll
I
use
like
it
that.
To, I'll use mm-hmm. it to close my programs.
Okay.
And I won't look at the audience. And I'll act it out as a one-man play.
Oh.
And then when I come to the end, you know, when he mm-hmm. turns around and I hold like I'm holding, like I'm God holding his face and say, honey, I'd
mm-hmm.
never leave you. When you only saw one set of footprints, I was carrying you.
Carrying you.
Then I stopped.
That's the best. Mm-hmm.
Then I turn to the audience, and I invite them to close their eyes,
mm-hmm.
climb up on God's back,
aww.
Wrap your arms around his chest, wrap
mm-hmm.
your legs around his waist,
mm-hmm.
and know that no matter what happens, he will
mm-hmm.
take care of you.
I love that. That's so... You are such a sweet soul, Jim, and you're just a natural motivator and inspirer, and because you're a real human being, and that's a blessing.
Well, and that it is, and
mm-hmm.
and again, it's the gift.
Of course, it
and
is.
My,
you're the
my
one
goal
gets the joy and the pleasure.
Oh
mm-hmm.
man, I'm telling you, everywhere
yeah.
I go, to go to the grocery store and see a little kid in the cart, and I run up to the mother, I say, what aisle did you find this beautiful little baby in?
I do stuff like that, too.
And you say, do you take beautiful pills? And, you know,
yeah.
without looking at the mother, you know she's just going crazy. Or I go to Starbucks, and they have a ballet studio down, four doors
mm-hmm.
down, and these little three-year-olds come in with
they're
these
so
tutus
good.
On, and I go nuts, and you just want, oh, my God, can I take you home?
I know. They're so precious.
You have to go, and what I'm going to ask you to do
yes.
by way of bringing this to a conclusion
mm-hmm.
is either for you to go in your heart
mm-hmm.
or for you to sit quietly and tell us what God has asked you to share with us today.
Well, God asked me to share, it's always the same thing, is teach people how to be happy and prosperous, make spiritual progress, become vegetarians, and know that God is a person right with you.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to close the show. Do you want to stay or do you want me to?
Well, the only reason I got to go is I have an appointment. But
okay.
I didn't know it would be long, but I loved it, Jim, and I just
do we have blackberry pie, girl?
You got it. Hot blackberry pie. Uh-huh, because I'm that blackberry picker out there. That's hard work, picking blackberries.
Oh, I'll bet it is.
And
I'll
make sure there's no bears out there. I'm picking in their spot.
But yeah, but that's right.
We got bears up here.
Okie dokie. Thank you, sweetheart.
Oh, thank
and we'll do
you,
this
my
again.
Darling, so much. You're so kind and generous to invite me and to share today.
Always and been a joy. And like
and
I said,
people could go to my website, which is www.terrycolewhittaker.com, TerryColeWhittaker.com. They can go to YouTube and see Terry Cole Whittaker videos. I have them on my website. I have some free talks there. And, you know, that would be just nice.
What about your retreats?
And I have retreats. If you want to, you can email me at terry@terrycolewhittaker.com. I'll send you a retreat flyer or my grandmasters. Those are people that I work with on a personal basis who are, you know, committed spiritual seekers. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
All right.
Well,
many
you
blessings.
Keep up the great work. And
you
thank
too.
You. And like I said to people, if you had sent me your bio before I asked you, I would have been, oh my God, look at all she's been on Oprah. She's been on
oh my
this
God.
Or that.
I did
but
everything
like
I wanted using this teaching. And then also just God is so good all the time. And if people will realize, if you find the good in everything, you can never be defeated.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no such thing as defeat. This is all.
No.
This is all a process, and
yes,
we're guided.
Everybody's a winner. Nobody's a loser. Mm-hmm.
As it says in A Course in Miracles, if you knew who walks beside you on the path you have chosen, fear would be impossible.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
And for each person to decide who's walking beside them on the path they've chosen.
Yeah, I have somebody walking with me inside.
There you go.
Uh-huh. We all
do. You can
do
it any way you
Everybody
want.
You can trust yourself. There's nothing wrong with you. Never.
That's the next book I'm going to write. It's called
what?
I Believe in God, But I Don't Trust Him. How many
yeah,
people believe in God?
Is, one of my students is Neil Donald Walsh, and he wrote Conversations with God.
Right.
So
I've got 12 or 13 of those books.
Yeah, Neil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a good
writer. And I loved it because he said, even if you don't believe that I talk to God.
Mm-hmm.
Just read this, and if it resonates with you, take it. If not, throw it away.
Exactly. That's Neil. He's a
and
good
well,
guy.
And, but that should be all of our messages.
Mm-hmm.
If this
we
resonates
just offer,
with
take
you,
take it or leave it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. I don't
take
it personally.
It. No.
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing our best, and if you like it, fine. If you don't, someone asked my teacher, because I have my teacher who's 97. He just recently went to the spiritual world. But anyway, I'd say to Maharaji, when I lived in India, there might be three people there, and I'd say, somebody said to him, well, why is it that people don't stay? He said, oh, they don't like it. He didn't care. You like it or you don't like it. If you don't like it, go somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all a progress. I mean, if you and I had our religion, we'd bring people in, we'd teach them what we knew, and we'd say, okay, now you got to go find your next teacher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You constantly want to empower them, and you want to release them, and you want them to move on their journey. And we're just like passing
to,
boats
yes,
in
but
a river.
Yes, to always respect your teachers, because that's a wonderful thing. Not to diss them, but to always. I like to always think about all the different teachers I've had and what a blessing. Even some of the people that didn't like me or were mean or cruel, they were great lessons because it helped me to seek my happiness from within.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
All right, dear one.
All right,
and
thank you, beautiful.
And give my love to Rosemary, too, okay?
I will. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay, so now we'll quote-unquote close this. And the closing quote is to be aware of destination addiction, a preoccupation with the idea that happiness is in the next place, the next job, with the next partner. Until you give up that idea that happiness is somewhere else, it will never be where you are. Now, isn't that fascinating how we talked about that? And that's the closing quote for the day. And the closing story, and then I'm going to just basically go over Terry's stuff. is, so I walked to the door and knocked. Just a minute, answered a frail, elderly voice. I could hear something being dragged across the floor. After a long pause, the door opened. A woman in her 90s stood before me. She was wearing a print dress and a pillbox hat with a veil pinned on it, like somebody out of a 1940s movie. By her side was a small nylon suitcase. The apartment looked as if nobody had lived in it for years. All the furniture was covered with sheets. There were no clocks on the walls, no knickknacks, no utensils on the counters. In the corner was a cardboard box filled with photos and glassware. Would you carry my bag out to the car? I took the suitcase to the cab and then returned to assist the woman. She took my arm and we walked slowly to the curb. She kept thanking me for my kindness. It's nothing, I told her. I just try to treat my passengers the way I would want my mother treated. Oh, you're such a good boy, she said. When we got in the cab, she gave me an address and then asked, could you drive through downtown? It's not the shortest way, I quickly answered. Oh, but I don't mind. I'm in no hurry. I'm on my way to a hospice. I looked in the rearview mirror. Her eyes were glistening. I didn't have any family left, she continued. The doctor says I don't have very long. I quietly reached over and shut off the meter. What route would you like me to take? I asked. For the next 2 hours, we drove through the city. She showed me a building where she had worked in it as an elevator operator. We drove through the neighborhood where she and her husband had lived when they were newlyweds. She had me pull up in front of a furniture warehouse that once had been a ballroom where she had gone dancing as a girl. Sometimes she asked me to slow down in front of a particular building or a corner and would sit staring into the darkness, saying nothing. At first hint of the sun was rising on the horizon, she suddenly said, I'm tired. Let's go now. We drove in silence to the address she had given me. It was a low building, like a small convalescent home, with a driveway that passed under a portico. Two orderlies came out to the cab as soon as we pulled up. They were solicitous and intent, watching her every move. They must have been expecting her. I opened the trunk and took a small suitcase to the door. The woman was already seated in a wheelchair. How much do I owe you? She said, reaching into her purse. Nothing, I said. You have to make a living, she answered. There are other passengers, I responded. Almost without thinking, I bent over and I gave her a hug. She held on to me tightly. You gave an old woman a little moment of joy. Thank you. I squeezed her hand and then walked into the dim morning light. Behind me, a door shut. It was the sound of the closing of a life. I didn't pick up any more passengers that shift. I drove aimlessly in thought. For the rest of that day, I could hardly talk. What if that woman had gotten an angry driver, or one who was impatient to end his shift? What if I had refused to take the run, or honked once and then driven away? On quick review, I didn't think that I had done anything more important in my life. We're conditioned to think that our lives revolve around great moments, but great moments often catch us unaware, beautifully wrapped in what others may consider a small one. People may not remember exactly what you did or what you said, but they will always remember how you made them feel. Life may not be the party we hope for, but while we are here, we might as well dance. So just going through Terry's stuff again, her website is like her name, Terry Cole Whitaker, TerryColeWhitaker. WHITTAKER. You can Google it and you'll get to the website. She's on YouTube. She's got retreats. Her email is like she told you, Terry@TerryColeWhitaker.com. And that concludes that. I just want to mention again that we have the Valentine's Love Cruise, and there's a sale going on for it now. I don't know how long the sale is going on. I'm just a speaker. There'll be 14 other of us right now. Go to lovecruise.com. Scroll down. You get my picture. You see my picture because it's on the screen every show. Get the details of the cruise and go love the Love Cruise and go sign up. And I can't wait for us to spend a week together on Valentine's Day of next year. And as always, I send love from my heart to your heart. And I ask the love, ask you to receive the love, and then share it. There's an infinite supply of love. Thank you for listening to Terry. We had a great time together. Bye-bye. Talk to you next time.